Hello, my name is Natalie Savelle. Welcome to the Stepmom Strong podcast. This show is for stepmamas or anyone dating a parent, really, all about how to navigate the challenges that come up in this complicated and often underestimated role. I'll be bringing you tips, tricks, validation, and support so that you know that you don't have to feel alone in this role, and there are ways to make things a little less overwhelming. I hope you enjoy. You all are in for a treat today. I am so excited to re-release this interview with Avital Schreiber. She is an incredible parenting coach. I love her work. I love how she talks about kids and relating to them. And she has some really helpful tips and suggestions and ideas for stepmoms in this episode. I know you're going to love it, so I can't wait to hear your thoughts. Be sure to write me your comment, and I'll see you on the other side. Okay, welcome back everyone to Empowering Stepmoms, Reimagining the Modern Family virtual interview series. I'm Natalie Savelle, your host. I help stepmoms go from overwhelm, confusion, resentment, and stress to confidence, clarity, and connection. And I'm super excited today to bring you Avital Schreiber. She is a mindful parenting coach. Welcome, Avital. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
Sure. She's helped thousands of people, parents, through her courses and memberships and hundreds of thousands through her blog. And her major goal is to unvictimize parents. She wants parents to enjoy their lives and feel authentic and joyful. And she wants every child to grow up with a parent who feels empowered and confident in their parental role. And so we're really excited to talk to Avital today. She's going to kind of talk about the concepts that she uses with her parents, with the step-parenting journey, and how those are applicable. So she's super influential and has made a huge difference in so many people's lives. I know, I hear my friends talk about her work all the time. And so we're really excited to hear her perspective today.
Thank you, Natalie.
Sure. So first of all, can you tell us, I know one of your main concepts is the importance of play. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how that's such a guiding post for you in your work with parents?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. So I think I was really struck maybe by the lack of play when I first moved to the United States specifically. And I know you probably have people listening from all over the world, but unfortunately, this is kind of an epidemic that's spreading everywhere. But this idea that we are more and more controlling of children's childhoods and of their time, and that it's more and more monopolized by things like school, longer school hours, longer school days, longer school years, and then much more schoolwork after school. And then, of course, we have the infamous and somewhat, I guess, paradoxical screen issues, screen addictions, etc. So just all in all, the time that children have for free play has been very, very limited, almost to none, for many, many, many children around the world. And as I became a parenting junkie and read more and more about what children need developmentally, I learned more and more about the importance of independent play. And I like to say kind of three I's, that it should be independent, immersive, and imaginary. And that excludes any structured activities. It excludes parent-led, adult-led activities. It excludes anything that isn't voluntary and isn't self-satisfying, self-directed, and that has an open-ended outcome. So when you play, there's no answer, right? It's not like you can get it right or wrong. Unlike, you know, a maths textbook or even a puzzle, of which, you know, there's kind of a right or wrong there. So real play is characterized by those things. And what I learned was just how crucial that was for children's development on every single level, including even the academic success that people are so driven for. But also, of course, things that I think are more important, such as emotional regulation and self-concept and focus and just, you know, overall satisfaction and happiness. And I think most of us know this from our adult lives. You know, we know that if we don't have a playful career, if we're not blessed to do work that we love, or at least other forms of play in our lives where we can be creative, like maybe we love cooking, or maybe we love being in social networks, or maybe we're crafty, or yoga, or whatever our sports is creative. We know that that's not a happy life. And yet for children, that's what's happening for a lot of the time. So that's the one side of it, is just really advocating for reclaiming play in children's lives as what I call the pillar of childhood, that play should be the biggest, most important chunk. You know, once there's shelter and love and food and all the basics are taken care of, then I would prioritize play over all else for children. But I just want to highlight the bonus there, which I think is crucial and really overlooked, which is that for parents, that makes for a much more satisfying life as well. A child who can and is immersed in their own projects and in their own flow on a daily basis, first of all, is an easier child to manage. They're more regulated and they're more happy, so everyone wins. And second of all, you can drink your coffee while it's hot. You don't have to be running around entertaining, managing, you know, clingy children, addicted to screens, I mean, whiny children, because they have a life. They have a life outside of you. And that's, so I think it's win-win for everyone. And that's why I put it at front and center in my work.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love that. And so I can see how this could be a role that stepmoms could take on, is advocating for their stepkids. Like maybe their stepkids don't get to play a lot at their biological mom's house, but I'm wondering like how stepmoms could use this as part of, if they feel called to this and it feels like they get excited about it. And yes, like I want our house to be a house of play. How can they create that kind of situation so that when their stepkids come over, they're more likely to engage themselves in their own self-directed play?
That's a really great question. And it's the bulk of my work is dedicated to that question, because I think there are different elements to it, right? But the two most important elements, if I have to really distill it here, is you, or me, ourselves, how we approach play and how we talk about it and whether or not we get involved in it and facilitate it, etc. So learning to be a supportive role for that, not someone who controls, who micromanages, not someone who interrupts. You know, in our home, we tiptoe, we whisper when the kids are playing. Like we treat it like an adult who's writing a novel, like don't disturb, you know? So really seeing it almost, I guess, like the quality of play is almost like the quality of sleep. We want kids to be allowed to sink into those deeper levels of play. Mm. If you keep interrupting them, and if there's noise and if there's distractions, they'll never get there and they'll always be cranky because they never got that deep restoration that they needed. So that's you, that's managing your own self, managing also probably a tendency that most of us have to overcompensate for things, like, oh, when you come to my house, I'll buy you more things, or I'll make it super fun, or I'll be extra strict because you don't have boundaries in the other home, or I'll be extra lenient because you have too many boundaries in the other home. Really examining all of those internal voices that send us into a really frazzled state, centering ourselves and being true to what the child needs, this specific child in front of us, and what we need, and not, you know, not trying to sway too much in either direction, being a grounding force. So that's how atmospherically, like energetically, we create that field that invites a child into a space of focus.
That's interesting.
And then on the environment side is the other thing. So I would say, like, leave the child out of it. Don't try to control the child or push the child. Just work on your own energy and on the environment at hand. And I really, like, I can't state enough how important it is to have an inviting environment, a minimalistic environment. If your house is overrun with toys, if there's too many distractions, if it's too hard to clean up afterwards, especially with younger children, if the play space is far away from the adults, or if it's in a space that's not inviting, where there's no natural light or air, you know, which is often the basement playroom situation, you're going to have a harder time in luring someone, seducing someone to want to play there because it's not enticing. And you just, for that, I mean, I have a whole childhood design guide that I'm happy to link to, but really what I want you to know is just imagine for your own self the type of space you'd want to sink into a deep state of flow. That's what our children need too. So culturally, we think they need more stimulation, more toys, more colors, more bright lights. And the opposite is true. That's all very, very distracting. Pare it down, keep it really simple, and free up the space and time to just do their inner work, their play that's much more meaningful.
Yeah, I love that. And I think especially for step kids who are going back and forth between houses and they've been through their parents' divorce, they've had a lot of stressful stuff. And we were just talking in another interview about how there's a good chance that they could be less emotionally regulated than kids who come from a biological family where both mm-hmm. of their parents are still together. So I think especially for them, it's important that they have those safe spaces. And I love what you said about, those are things I've never thought of having it be close to the parents, the play area. And I think, and I've also noticed that when the kids' toys are super well organized, they like go to them more. They're like ready to play with them. Whereas if they're all over the place, they don't touch them. They're like not interested at all. So that really speaks to what you're saying of like making it a space where they can put their stuff away easily and it can like just be inviting and welcoming for them.
Yeah, simplicity is so key there. And it's the same as for adults. You don't want to start cooking in a kitchen that's overwhelmingly messy. Like, why would you even start, right? I always say, if you come to work one day and you have 7 computers and 5 phones and 6 printers, where do you begin? You can't do your work, right? It's not about the toys. It's not about more. It really is about less and just making it more inviting and more simplified. And to your point about children who have been through a divorce or a separation or they're in a blended family, they're going to have a lot of themes, every child, but especially here, we know that they're going to have a lot of themes that they'll want to heal and explore through play. And, you know, if you can cater to that, I would say specifically here, I would also make sure to have, again, I think this is true for every child, but to have figures, especially young children, just simple character toys who could represent these various elements in their lives. Maybe it's 2 dolls' houses instead of 1, for example, right? Just ways that they can symbolically act out and heal and work through any stresses or any confusion or any, you know, themes that are playing out in their real life, because that is the role of play. And that's one of the reasons it makes it so much easier for parents is it's like free therapy. You know, you let your child play like this, you will see which themes are bubbling to the surface, what's hurting, what needs addressing, what perhaps at some point you do want to get in there and play with them and start to, you know, start to a little bit introduce themes of resiliency or of, apology or of healing or of whatever it is. Mm. It's a safe space where they're allowed to explore those themes and they'll express them if they're given the opportunity.
Yeah, that's great. So they actually work through and do their own self-work in their play. And especially stepkids have a lot of stuff to work through. So that's super powerful. So what do you say to parents who are like, well, my kids are already 6 or up, 10, 12, and all they want to do is play video games. All they want to do is be on their phones. How do you help them break that habit?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, there's a lot of different research about this stuff and I don't like to be dogmatic about it. I think screens and technology is wonderful. My entire career is built on a screen. I want my children to have literacy when it comes to technology, and I don't want to demonize anyone who uses screens. I also think if the alternative is you being stressed out and yelling at them, et cetera, then watching a movie or whatever is a good idea. So that's my disclaimer. But then from there forward, I just would say some research and some of our own intuitions points to the idea that some screen use is harmful, is damaging, and is addictive. We know it from ourselves, right? I mean, I'm addicted, hands up. I mean, everyone's addicted, right? Exactly. So we know that the quality of these games is addictive. And I would say if you had another addictive substance in your house, you know, if it was cocaine lying around on your countertops and your kids were just, they kept snorting cocaine, and what can you do? Like, then you would have the conviction and the drive to put that to bed, to make that end. So I think you have to ask yourself, is this type of screen use in this situation, is it a crutch? Is it an addiction? Is it similar to a drug use? If so, treat it that way and set a firm boundary. And I'm not saying it is or isn't, because there's a million different uses of screens, you know, and some of them are highly positive. But I think in some situations, it's our responsibility as the adult. Even if your kid is 16 years old, you're still the adult in the house and you have to claim, I think, you know, I don't have a 16-year-old who's addicted to screens, but I have a 6-year-old who's addicted to screens. And I think it's my job as the adult to protect him from that by being extremely firm, loving, and clear that this is simply not good for his brain. And, you know, it's really not about a power struggle, and it's not about, I never use it as a punishment or as a reward or anything. It's just about doing your research, deciding what is a healthy amount of screen use for myself, for my husband, and for my children, for all of us. What is healthy, you know? And then making that a ritual and a rule, and making that extremely clear, extremely consistent, to the point where it's not going to be a conversation anymore. This is just how we do it.
Yeah.
I think ritualizing really helps for me. I know a lot of people don't like to set those kind of limits. I do. Like, we have a strictly screen-free tech Sabbath every Saturday. We only do movies twice a week. We do audiobooks in the car. Like, we just set rules. And when we're not sure about the rules, we'll have a family meeting and we'll say, hey, what does everyone think? Well, here's some research I read. Here's what I feel. Okay, let's decide. Right. And we decide and test it out for a while, you know?
And you have 3 kids, right?
Yeah.
Okay. What are their ages?
2, 4, and 6.
2, 4, and 6. Okay. Yeah. So you're like right in the thick of it. Yeah. Starting to form habits and rituals and rules. And
yes. Yeah.
So, and what if a stepkid is coming from, you know, playing video games all day long at his bio mom's house or her bio mom's house, and then they come to your house and you're like, sorry, we don't do screens here. And they're like, well, this is boring. I have nothing to do. There's nothing to do. And they have a big fit, right? Or whatever. Yeah. And they say, you guys aren't no fun. You don't have video games. So you don't have this video game that I like. How do you tell parents to handle that type of situation? And how could stepmoms possibly be handling that?
Yeah. So I would say the first thing you need there is conviction in your decision. Don't make this decision off the cuff. If you've decided that this is not healthy because you've done your thinking and you've done your introspection and your meditation and you've come to this choice, then you'll be a lot more powerful in that space. And then what I would say is that don't shy away from uncomfortable feelings or from upset. And really the tool there to me is just empathy. Like, yeah, I get it. You really love playing that game. And at your mom's house, you play that game. And that's how she rolls. In our house, we don't feel it's healthy. And we feel that we love you too much to be letting you play that game all day here. We would love to spend time with you in X, Y, Z ways, hopefully attractive ways. You know, we can go on a hike, we can cook together, we can read a book. But in our house, this is how we do it. This is what we believe. And I think what will happen then is a meltdown in many cases, right? A screaming fit, I hate you, slamming doors, all of that stuff. That's great. Like, embrace that, invite that in. That's a child's opportunity to release all their anger and all of their pent up feelings. And it's not an opportunity for you to be like, oh, well, then I guess you can have the game. No, I think it's really a child asking to be taken care of, asking for you to be true to yourself and true to your boundaries, and asking to be loved in that way. You know, asking for someone to care enough to say no and to hold the no kindly, you know?
Yeah.
And I think eventually that's experienced as love. Like, eventually they really feel like, well, you know, I've had my kids turn around to me and be like, thank you for stopping me or whatever. You know, like, that can happen. I'm not saying it will, but it can happen that they even realize themselves, like, you know what? I hate it and I wish I could play my video game, but I can see how this is good for me and how this comes from a place of love. And I actually appreciate coming to you guys. I trust you guys because of the type of home environment you create for me. Mm. So yeah, I really wouldn't shy away from those negative feelings. That has to come out, and that's good. Let them slam the doors. Don't let them be destructive or hurt you, but let them cry. Let them yell. Let them whine. Let them say, I hate you. You're the worst. You know, I wish my dad never married you. All of the worst things they can think of. Bring it on, baby. Like, let it out, you know? Let it, good. You know, I always use the analogy of pooping or diarrhea, you know? Like, if you have diarrhea, like, get it out, man. Yeah.
And usually, I love the idea that often tantrums, like, it's not just about that particular situation. It gives them an opportunity to let all of the emotions from their entire life, from yesterday when you know, Joey at school made fun of them. Like, they're getting out everything that they've built up, and you're giving them that opportunity by setting that limit that they're not happy about. So it's such a hard thing to do as a parent, is like embrace those feelings and be like, this is good, right? That's such a mindset shift. It takes so much practice. But it's so helpful to return to that over and over again and be like, okay, this is good. And this is how I want to provide a space for my kids. I've also noticed that when I, like, so I kind of vacillate. I'll start to let a little more screen time in, and then I'll start to, you know, cut it off a little bit more. And I've noticed that sometimes to cut it off before my kids go back to self-directed play, I have to be guiding them first. Like, instead of that, let's do this. And then and then from there, they'll get used to, like, you know, play instead of screen. And then they start to self-direct themselves too. So I think there's something to be said for the parent guiding at first, right? And then the kid kind of catches on. And I love what you're saying about child directed, but I think for transition, sometimes it can be helpful, right, for the parent to...
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, and you can do that in a directed way, or you can even just do that in a, as an, I call it a strew, like open-ended invitation. Like, if you leave out a couple of fun things that, you know, fun games, or if you just set it up and it, like you said, when you organize the play area, it becomes inviting.
Right.
You can direct them by saying, hey, let's do this, and sit down and start them off. Or you can just leave out kind of invitations for exploration, and that often also takes hold.
Yeah, awesome. I love that. So I wasn't even planning to go in that direction, but that's where it led. And it's great, because I think a lot of stepmoms struggle with that issue where the kids aren't used to the rules at their house. And so how to, and it's okay for kids to have different rules at different houses. Kids can adapt to that. Just like you have different rules at soccer than you do at 100%. Basketball, or, you know, kids adjust. School rules are different than, you know, playtime rules or daycare rules or whatever. So I think kids can adjust to those things, and we can create those environments for our stepkids. So we're going to switch gears a little bit and talk about a second thing that I know that you're really great at talking about, which is the idea of bonding with your kids or stepkids, and how sometimes, and I see this a lot, where stepmoms like dislike their stepkids. They don't understand them. They're confused by them. They don't know how to engage with them. So what are your tips for parents and step-parents when that stuff happens?
So one of the first things I want to say is, if you're a step-parent who isn't a biological parent, or even if you're also a biological parent, is that this isn't special just to step-parents. This is something that a lot of biological parents feel too. And
everyone just breathed a sigh of relief.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's important, because you could probably link a lot to that. You know, you could probably pin it on that, but it's not really necessarily that. There's goodness of fit in every relationship, and there's lack of goodness of fit in many relationships, and that's okay. And that's okay. That's something to make friends with, I would say. But one of the things I've been thinking about a lot recently is just letting go, just putting down a lot of those stories. You know, we put a lot of stories onto this, like, oh, he said things to me, I don't like him, his behavior, his mom ruined him, his dad ruined him, the divorce ruined him, he hates me, it's not gonna work, right? All these stories, you probably have a really long list of stories that you're telling about this relationship. We'll never get on together. When he gets married, who will come to the wedding? Who's gonna be in charge? Who has to pay for him? All of the different resentments and pieces of this puzzle that get extra complicated in a blended family can start to pile up this big ton, you know, like a ton load, a truckload of baggage and story onto the relationship. And what I would really say, and I know, you know, I'm saying it in a few sentences, this is big work. But what I would really say is to start to put that, just to lay that down, to pick, take all those heavy rocks and set them down and open up a simple human-to-human channel with this child, where you're going to put your agendas down, your anxieties, your beliefs, your worries, and also your preconceived notions about who the kid is, who you are, what the relationship is. Because one of the things that we don't do in our culture, and that I think we need to do, is to give ourselves and our children license to be a new person in any given moment. And for relationships to be new relationships in any given moment. And instead, we're buried in thoughts about the past and projections about the future, instead of just coming into this moment, and now this moment, and now this moment, and just seeing what's there, you know, just being open and neutral to that. And I think that's really the first and most transformative thing, is to stop the worry cycle, to stop the anxiety cycle, to stop the judgment cycles, simply because they don't serve you. They do not serve you. This child is in your life, like it or not. And, you know, underneath all of those layers of judgment and anxiety and worry and fear and projections is, you know, is a unity with all of humanity, is an ability to connect with anyone. It's there, right? And I just think you need to tap into that. And we all do, biological parents, step parents, whatever, in our marriages as well. You know, we layer on so many stories that we forget to just, you know, sink a little deeper.
It's actually happening. Yeah.
Yeah. Connect to the real sense of connection. And one of the things that can help with that, I think, is if you envision a little bit of an extreme situation, if you envision someone suddenly being very sick or having an accident, or the prospect of losing someone, the prospect of this being my last day on earth, suddenly everything falls into perspective and we're able to just connect to another human being and appreciate ourselves and them and our lives. And I always say, like, let's not wait for the accident. Let's drop into that appreciation and connection now, where, you know, if an accident happens or something, you suddenly don't care about the video games and did they behave and what they called me and the names. You know, you let that all go. You put it down.
Right.
So just put it down for a moment and just see how, if you can tap into that, and the more and more and more you can do that, it could become more of the way of being just in general. Yeah.
I love that. So just put it down, stepmoms. Okay, no problem. And you'll
just for a minute, just for a second.
We're very attached to our stories, right? Like, we love our stories and our stories love us, right? Like, I know this stuff and I find myself replaying the same old stories. You know, they come back over and over and over again. It's like, wait, that doesn't really serve me when I believe that story, right? And like, it doesn't serve my family. Right. It doesn't serve my relationship. So yeah. And so I think,
we're making it sound simple. I realize it's not.
It is simple, and it's really challenging, right? Like, the concept is so simple, but in practice it takes a lot of work, which is why, like, having it be an intention in your life and having it be like a path that you're on, I think is so super helpful. And having, like, we have a couple of people talking about mindfulness specifically, and that's one of the best ways to do that practice of, like, dropping the story and coming into the present moment, right? I love what you said about, imagine that there's, like, an accident and you're, you know, how would you be with those people around you if you know, it was a life or death situation? And that's so powerful. I think that people who do have those kinds of, like, big trauma with their kids, they think about things so differently. You know, like, they are not worried about the dishes or all the little stuff. Like, they're really more conscious and more resilient to the little things that we think are so important in our day to day. Yeah,
and we can borrow from that without the tragedy aspect.
Right, you know? Right.
Borrow that sense of appreciation, borrow that sense of perspective.
That's awesome. I love that.
I think that's helpful.
And then tell us how we can find your free gift, like what you have to offer the stepmoms who are watching today.
Sure, absolutely. So I mentioned I have a childhood design guide, which you can just get by signing up to my newsletter at theparentingjunkie.com. But I wanted to point you in the direction of a masterclass, an online training. It's a free online training about transforming your adult relationship. And what it really is about being a creator of the adult relationship that you want as parents together. It's about renewing contracts, kind of thing, renewing our understanding of division of labor, reconnecting, because one of the biggest complaints that my clients tell me is, great, I love all this parenting stuff, I'm all over it, but when my husband gets home, I'm like Mrs. Mean to him. All of the energy that I'm trying not to put on my children, I'm not managing to create with my husband, or a lot of resentment over differences in parenting styles. And so in this free training, it's really about transforming that adult relationship. So I would love to invite everyone over to that as well.
That's great. Well, I love that. And the stepmoms too run into that a lot, the parenting style differences, and they're not their kids and they're watching, you know, they have these difference in agendas. And so that can be definitely cause like a huge, issue in their relationship. So I love that you're offering that. Thank you so much. And thank you for being here. This has been awesome. I'm sure so valuable for the show. And we will see you all next time. Thanks for watching. Bye.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for listening today. If you enjoyed this episode, please feel free to write a review so that more people can find this podcast. Show notes, resources, anything mentioned on the interview, you can find on my website, www.nataliesavelle.com/podcast. And I will see you next time. Make it a wonderful week.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.